When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Boston Garden. And now, let's meet the starters for the Boston Celtics.
Celtic Stuff Live. With your hosts, Justin Poulin and John Duke.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of Boston Celtics coverage. That's right, me and John, one more game to go, and then it's the postseason, everybody, and I'm ready. I'm ready, and you know who else is ready? Rob Williams is ready. He's going to get some minutes, dude. And, you know, you listen to Scal and Mike talk quite a bit about it, deservingly so, because the last couple of games has been good. But in this Memphis matchup that you and I just finished watching, you look at Rob and Scal and Mike are talking about it. And boy, what happened from the point of that injury until now? And I've been thinking about this, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say it, but that whole second year phenomenon where the players get the off season and they come back and a lot of them just feel a lot more comfortable in that second season. I feel like the pandemic created a second season effect, and especially for Rob Williams, because he's starting to realize that athletically he is way ahead a lot of the other players in the league. He really is. And the level of patience he now has. He was always a good passer, though. Even before the injury, the passing, his ability to kick it out quick and make that decision mentally, very heads-up player. Had the athleticism to do the blocks. But position-wise on defense and offensively the patience, those are the two things that usually happen from year one to year two. And I think this could wind up playing out pretty substantially for the Celtics in the postseason, because they needed a guy who could alter a game like that coming in 2 minutes. And with the war on Tice, Lord knows they're going to get thin, man.
World War Tice is what it is. He's looked really stupendous. I mean, really going back to the Nets game, obviously, you know, great in the Toronto game, showed up again in the Magic game. I mean, he has showed out, and he has, like you said, taken that opportunity away from the game healthy for the first time in an offseason, or last year's offseason between his rookie year and his sophomore year, again, had more injury issues. And so it's been a constant battle for him. This year, you know, he's got a little bit of good stuff going, then gets hurt again. And I think this is when things are hopefully coming together for him. And I totally agree with you. I mean, the difference between how he looked in that game, especially the Toronto game, where he had a couple bad, bad position. He was kind of too aggressive, and then he adjusted and then he made that correction. And that's a team of smart guys with a lot of guards who can get downhill and make you look stupid. And it didn't matter. Didn't matter with Rob Williams. Rob Williams was there. He was the best center on the court that night. When you had Marc Gasol and you had Serge Ibaka and the best guy on the court in the center position for the Celtics and the Raptors was Robert Williams. Go figure.
Yeah, pretty wild. And another phenomenon or emerging trend that I hope continues. And in the Memphis game, especially at the start and then also at the beginning of the third quarter, it was frustrating me the way that they were settling for outside shots. But the team's willingness to pass and create lanes and attack the basket has been really strong. But it was Gordon Hayward over several games increasing. And I remember thinking, boy, he's starting to attack the basket. I love it. And I remember on the last show that we recorded, we talked about him having his bounce back, But geez, who was the game before Memphis? Was that Portland?
No, that was the Magic.
No, the Magic.
Yeah.
Man, the way that he has just built up towards that Magic game where he was all of a sudden leaping, dunking. And if you remember when he was first coming back at the beginning of last year with that ankle injury, his ability to get up, he was getting met by the rim and rejected. He just didn't have that little pop. And all of a sudden he's elevating, I would say seriously, an inch and a half to 2 inches more easily than he has since he got injured. He's starting to look athletically like the old Gordon Hayward, and it's showing in his aggressiveness to the basket. Having that with Tatum, with Brown hitting those outside three-pointers the way that he is, man, that is what is creating so much of a tough matchup. The one we've been salivating for, the what we had hoped we would see all this time. And then you have Walker, who, especially in that Memphis game, just looking very smooth, very comfortable, creating action, you know, off high picks that aren't even sometimes executing quite right. And he's still getting some of that free space to be able to get off a three-pointer. So the spacing is phenomenal. The chemistry with the team is great. They're getting better every single game, and dynamically offense, but the effort's there on defense too. We're not seeing that commitment to only one end, you know, each game, and then the other game.
Yeah, you know, and when we last recorded, I think that was after the Miami game and maybe before the Toronto game, or
no, it was before the Miami game.
Okay,
we went an extra game. We were supposed to talk before Memphis.
Yeah.
And we didn't. We both went 3-1.
Yes.
But we thought we would. We both thought we were both correct. But
nailed it.
Both wrong on what the loss was going to be.
Yeah.
You were going for the second game on a back to back, I believe. And I think I said the Toronto game, and it turns out it was the Miami game. So
who knows? Yeah. And I think since that Miami game, just using that as kind of a jumping off point, you know, I think that was a situation where the Miami Heat were a team that was the more motivated team. They hadn't done well against the Celtics all season. They had a little extra motivation without Jimmy Butler on the floor, and the Celtics played like garbage for 48 minutes. And so you put those two things together, and you're going to get a loss against a playoff team, a team that has so many weapons on the floor, and with Bam Adebayo, you really struggle to contend with that.
And like you said, more to play for in that game. I mean, absolutely. The Celtics need to play for chemistry, for playoff rotation and all that.
Right.
But pretty much their seed has been locked up since they came in.
Yeah.
With a great streak for them and a bad streak for Toronto. There was an outside shot. And, you know, they might have slipped a little bit if they'd lost every single game. But for the most part, and we said this on the very first show, they were pretty much locked up into the third seed.
Absolutely. But with the difference in that game, I guess when I after that game, and first of all, let's remember the Brooklyn Nets have really been overachieved given the roster and the teams that they've been going against. They have really overperformed what we would expect of them.
And just so wait till Kyrie comes in and makes them worse.
Exactly. Oh, totally, totally. But you know, the Celtics took that loss to Miami and they got themselves right, I guess. And then they played free, they played loose, and they kind of rediscovered the things defensively, offensively that they needed. And the other part is also, I think Kemba's minutes helped to balance out some of the roster stuff where I think they were really searching for chemistry. Now that Kemba is much closer to the type of minutes that he would be playing in the playoffs, I think it really all came together in those last few games. And now the Celtics are in a spot where, you know, they had a couple blowouts, a tight-ish game, but really also important to be able to do that against the Magic and pull that out and have some clutch plays down the stretch, Jason Tatum taking over. You really couldn't – I mean, other than going undefeated and just blowing everybody out, for anything other than that, this has been the best possible situation throughout this bubble probably for the Celtics.
Every player – has had a significantly shining moment. Every single one. Mm-hmm. Tice hitting shots from the corner, playing great defense, getting up in the lane and dunking. Rob Williams, what he's been doing. Even Romeo Langford has had some really impressive spot minutes. You have Brown, who took over a couple of games, shooting really well from outside. Tatum struggling at the start, and then he, you know, the most recent game that we have, what did he go, like 9 for 11? He missed, what, two shots against Memphis? Totally lit it up. Walker's had, you know, some really steady games, but a couple of really good. I mean, he's had his minutes restricted, but he's looked nice. Gordon Hayward's had big games. Cantor's had, you know, really good rebounding. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but everybody has had a really, really strong game here or there. So very good to see. And, you know, Marcus Smart, he had a really good game. But the thing about Marcus, and you just mentioned it with Kemba Walker, you know, Marcus is, in my opinion, at this point, there's no question he's a starting caliber point guard. He's not necessarily the first option, but any team in the league that does not have a Chris Paul or an already established superstar point guard would absolutely love to have Marcus Smart at the helm, leading that and directing that offense and making all those plays. How awesome is it, though, for the Celtics to finally have him coming back off the bench, like you said, with consistent minutes from Walker? Because even when Walker was starting in those restricted minutes, Marcus winds up playing like awkward rotations, right? He's got to do a little bit extra, but he's not really in with the starters. He's steadying the second unit. It just doesn't work quite the way you would want it to for the unit. He looks great. For the unit and the rotations, it's not always the way you would want it. Having him come off the bench the way that they have is just a whole different look for this team and their ability. They really don't have anybody else to come off the bench and steady the offense. And someday they're going to have that address, because Marcus Smart will absolutely be leading this team at the point guard position.
I think Marcus Smart has been, I mean, we've always seen it. You and I have talked about it. You know, he's had this playmaking gene in him from the beginning. And, you know, I contend that really the best position for him to be playing is the point guard position, because
he's the one that got Rob Williams going. Absolutely. The lobs early on built his confidence, and that's what set it off.
Absolutely. And on a team like this, with so many people who can score the ball, so many people who can attack and stretch the floor, it creates a situation where Marcus is free to do those things and has the room to work. And I think that, you know, I'd love to see his spot up, you know, shooting game, maybe pick up a little bit more. Seeing that he's a top three-point pull-up shooter, that one kind of caught me off guard here during the broadcast a few games ago. I just, you know, it's so impressive what he's done on the offensive end. We know how good he is defensively. Like, of course, the biggest thing now is, can they keep him healthy? You know, if you can keep him healthy and you can keep that bench kind of where it is right now, I think you clearly have finals, you know, on your mind. Not to say you're going to get there, but to say that you have a legitimate chance to get through the East with that, the type of bench that the Celtics have shown over the last 3-4 games.
Yeah, they need him to solidify the depth because of what we just said, how he got Rob going. There are other players on that bench rotation that need him to make that unit function properly. So they have depth, but without him and Walker, that depth doesn't necessarily achieve to the level that they're capable. Exactly. And so it is critical. They've got 8 or 9, possibly 10 deep that we might see in the postseason, depending on matchups, and largely because of that front court rotation, right? Mm-hmm. It's you've got, you know, it could be Tice, it could be Williams, it could be the other Williams in a couple of spot minutes. Cantor's going to get time, though. He's not, obviously, Tice is going to stay the starter. He's doing all the right things, and he's keeping, you know, there was a time for Tice, and I think they subtly mentioned this, but not as clearly as we're about to, but on the broadcast, there was a time when Tice had the hands up. What's going on, guys? Why aren't you giving me any love? Why do you keep doing this? And he's really toned that down. The thing he does now is he takes his jersey and he pulls it up over his face, and he acts like he's wiping sweat from his face. And then when his when he reemerges from the tee, you know, it's zen again.
Yeah.
He doesn't let it get in his head, and he doesn't let the refs see that it's bothering him.
That's so true. Good call.
There is going to be a moment in this postseason where Brad gets a tee for coming to Tice's aid. Because that's one thing Brad's really good at. If the player doesn't throw their arms up and try to petition the refs, then Brad is eventually going to go to war with the refs for that player. He's known to do it in the past. It's going to happen in the postseason. Are we ready to talk about seeding?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Philly pretty much, right? Isn't it pretty much locked up?
It seems like it. I mean, I don't see – I mean, right now you've got – it's close, but, you know, you've got basically a game that separates Indiana and Philly. They both have two games left, but, you know – to me, it seems like Miami's in the four slot. I don't see – though they play – the Indiana and Miami play again. I don't see a way that – it seems unlikely that it's going to be anything other than Miami 4, Indiana 5, and Philly 6, which I think is to give up the ghost on what I think here. I think that's the best possible situation for the Celtics.
Well, Simmons is guaranteed out?
He's out. Bye-bye.
He's out for the whole thing. It's just done. Okay.
Yep.
And then Embiid is out for a time, but may reemerge.
Little gimpy, but I think some of the reports today were that he doesn't look that serious. I don't know. Okay. I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll see. Yeah.
So is there a world where Simmons being out actually makes this Philly team stronger?
Absolutely.
That's the one scary thing, and it's not because Simmons isn't a talent. Believe me, I don't want to denigrate the player, but we've talked about this. They don't have outside shooting. They clog the middle. You know, Embiid can shoot from outside, but, you know, it's disjointed. It's the reason Al Horford's not meshing. There's a world where Ben Simmons not playing just gives them another Covington-style upstart guard to come in, get some minutes, nobody's paying attention to him, and Horford to get back into that starting rotation, or at least, you know, pretty well established and actually have enough room to play and play well. Because I think one of the biggest issues with Horford is having Simmons as that point forward, not being able to shoot outside, and then Embiid as well. The three of them just don't fit, plus the rest of the lineup. So with Simmons being out, maybe they maximize a little bit of this Al Horford presence. I want to ask you, is Horford washed up or just a bad fit?
I think it's probably more a bad fit than washed up. I mean, we saw last year what Al Horford was capable of, and I wouldn't want to pour dirt on the guy's grave. I think he's much more capable than what Philly has shown, but it takes smart players and it takes smart coaching to pull that out. And right now, you know, he's not in that spot. I mean, look, this is to talk about what Philly's done. The last four games, they're 3-1. But in that time, they played the Spurs, the Wizards, the Magic, and then they lost to Portland. So they're 3-1, but three of those games were against teams that aren't even going to make the playoffs. So in those games, hey, you know, Al's looked better. He went 8-for-14 against Orlando, 6-for-9 against Portland. I mean, he's getting more opportunities. He's touching the ball a lot. Great for him.
What about minutes? Do you have minutes right there?
Yeah, I do. 30,
playing right around 30.
31, 29, you know, basically 30, and then 22 against Portland.
But he's not starting, right? They have Josh starting.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
But that makes sense for him to come in that role and get those extended minutes. Yep.
But for this, I mean, okay, so if you're the Celtics, right, if you're not playing Embiid, all right, if Embiid's out of the game and it's Horford, right, do you worry about having Rob Williams out there on him? Do you worry about?
No, you attack. You've got to attack. Exactly. You've got to attack. You've got to tire him out. And he's not the longest. He's a position defender.
Yeah,
and so the whole thing, and it's what we started this whole discussion on for this podcast, but having Hayward with ups and being right and then having Brown and having Tatum, they have to just keep attacking, attack dish, drive dish, drive dish. And then if you do have a Rob Williams in there, and even a Kanter in certain circumstances, although, you know, different, I think you attack and finish with Kanter because you're hoping for the offensive rebound. I think you're driving and dishing with Williams and looking for an opportunity for him to set that screen. You begin to attack because he's doing a great job of timing the roll. And if it's Hayward and he's proven that he's got some ups and he's finishing, and definitely if it's Brown attacking the basket, they always are going to shy away from Williams. And you give him an inch where he can get up enough, he's going to finish those lobs no problem. It's not even a back to the basket thing. It's just up and down with the ball. And so I think that's where Horford gets in trouble with the Celtics. Too many options for him to pick up on the defensive end with that. If they're quick, they move the ball and they get three different, you know, drives and looks at finishing at the rim, they can cause a lot of problems for Al Horford's normally stalwart defense.
I you know, and I think for Philly, looking, if they play Horford with Embiid, I think that's a net loss for Philly, because I think the Celtics' quickness on the perimeter is such that there's no way Embiid's going to be able to stay with anybody out there. I mean, he's not going to stay with Tatum. He's not going to be able to stay with Jaylen Brown. That's the problem for Philly, I think, is Simmons was so perfect for them in that he had that length to protect the rim if you could pull Embiid out, but he also had the athleticism to stay with those guys and really still bother them. If you're just plugging and playing Horford in for Simmons, I think that's a big loss for Philly. And I don't think that's an overstatement in any way. I think the question is Embiid finally going to be the Embiid who he could be? If Embiid becomes Shaq 2001, which he kind of has the ability to do in this league, it's going to be a problem. But there's nothing I've seen that shows me he's capable of that mentally. You know,
and
the focus issue for him.
Yeah. The other issue for the Celtics too is when Philly has defeated the Celtics, it's because they have them camping out at the perimeter so predictably that Jason Tatum can't create the space to blow them up. And when they beat Philly, it's almost always because Tatum is lighting it up from the outside, to your point. And so you take Simmons away. If they continue to attack, even if they don't even intend on finishing the play, they've just got to keep sinking a team that already tends to sink to the hoop. They have to keep that defense sinking and collapsing towards the hoop so that they can create that space on the perimeter, because they do have to shoot well from outside to beat Philly, always have, but they've got the shooters to do it. And what could happen in a Philly matchup, and I can see this in the entire media, everybody like freaking out, I can see game one against Philly where the Celtics all of a sudden do that thing where they put that pressure on themselves. They're all cold from the perimeter. They drop game one, and the next thing you know, Embiid has a great game, couple of players play up, and everybody's like, oh, man, everybody counted Philly out because they don't have Simmons. And the next thing you know, a team that is very motivated to beat Philly and has always seen that, you know, everybody said Philly did it better. They got the better players. Da, da, da. Like, don't think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are not always having that in their head. It's always going to be a measuring stick of success for them. And I really believe that once we come out of that first game and everybody's saying that, that they will wind up lighting it up, and the narrative will change very quickly.
And you know, they're starting so quickly in between, so it's not as like you couldn't see what Embiid had done to his ankle. It wasn't really clear what happened, but you know, a week, you know, they're going to play, you know, roughly a week from now, as we're recording this Tuesday. The playoffs are supposed to start the 17th. Of course, we don't have what the schedule is yet, but you know, they're going to play probably every other day, being a week from now. So if there is anything in the least bit serious about that ankle injury, a week isn't a whole lot of time for that to rest. So there's that. And then there's the other piece of this, which is, you know, if they get in a hole, Is Philly really going to want to put their you know, injury plagued center out there when they don't have Ben Simmons and they don't have their best foot forward? Will they punt on the season at some point? I mean, look, he's still got Embiid, but you go down 0-2, you go down 0-3, it's a wrap, man. I mean, you know, you go down 3-1, like, you know, they're not going to. I don't think this is one of those like, all right, let's dig this out. We want to stay in the bubble longer. It's going to be, no, let's get home to our family and friends and, you know, hit the road. So that's kind of interesting. And especially when you're looking at what's
happening. That's a concept I hadn't even really thought of.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fight in the dog, right. You know, is going to have a big impact on that. If they don't really feel like they have a shot, and it might be easier to put some teams away, you know, depending on their chemistry. And that is something that has always kind of felt like a little bit of an issue in Philly. Not that they don't like each other, but the chemistry in general, like this Celtics team, ever since they got rid of Cancer Boy, has been all about the good vibes. You know what I mean? Jaylen Brown's a problem. He's got a bad attitude. Da, 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 da. Now he's like, yeah, the voice of the Players Association in the Black Lives Matter movement, right? Like, now he's the golden child. Look at Jaylen Brown. He's so great, you know? And there was a time when he was coming off the bench and, you know, everybody's like, trade him, trade him, trade him, you know? And a lot of people, a lot of fans were behind Kyrie. And thinking that the young players, remember the narrative, and Kyrie created this. The younger players don't want to do what it takes, and they're not blah, blah, blah. And look at where we're at right now. It's awesome. It's awesome.
The young guys on the Celtics made the young guys on the Nets look absolutely stupid last week. So think about that one. But you know,
that's true too. You're bringing up a good point. Kyrie used that line once again in a new city. Didn't even take him 12 months. That's a great point.
Whoops. You know, but you know, all the more reason the Celtics need to get through that. Not to look too far ahead here, but I'm already in round two, and I'm saying Celtics need to get through that series with Philly as quickly as they can, because they don't want to be in a battered, bruised situation going up against the Toronto Raptors. You know, they made them look bad last week, but I truly believe, you know, Toronto is
oh, they're strong
team as there is, you know,
and fast and fast, you know, that's going to be a really fun series. And you're right. The other thing that's going to happen for the Celtics is if they don't play that real fast attack, drive and dish style against Philly and they get lulled into it, they may not be as ready for that fast-paced attack that they're going to, you know, when they match up against Toronto. So, great point. They want to get that done, put some distance between a different style of play and the Raptors, and the way to beat the Raptors. I mean, the way to beat the 76ers will translate well to the Raptors if they commit to it. So, we just need to keep seeing this level of energy from this team.
Totally. You look at the Miami game, and you're like, I want this team to be done with the bubble and go home, you know, and you watch every game since that point and they, you know, they flipped a switch like the old 2010 Celtics.
But there's confidence in there.
Oh, totally.
You know,
totally confident.
There's a high level of, even when you see like Gordon Hayward miss 2 3-pointers in a row off the back rim and you're wondering if he's even going to bother, because that's what he's been like. Right? He misses a couple and he just shies away and does playmaker. He's not even doing that. He's being more aggressive. And that's a sign of confidence from the entire team. Like, okay, I got the open shot. I got to take it. And then, you know what? If it gets close and it comes down to the wire, there's always Jason Tatum to hit a three and then get the 2-pointer to force overtime. I mean, that man. His level of confidence and his level of clutch right now, you can't touch him. He's MC Hammer.
He would be too legit to quit, maybe, too. Anyway.
Yeah. My favorite, though, do you believe Scal when he said he came up with the Stash Gordon? Did you hear that?
I don't know about that.
I think he stole it. Mike called him out. He's like, who do we credit for that, right? And then Scal's like, me. I'm not buying it.
way.
You stole Stash Gordon from someone.
No way. No way.
I love it, though.
I'm not saying it's good. It's good.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's
not Time Lord, but Stash Gordon is pretty good. It's pretty good. His wife hates it, which makes everyone else love it all the more, too. It's kind of fun.
He looks like he should be in that movie Tombstone.
I was going to bring that up to you because I know you're a big Tombstone guy. If he hits, here's the dream, right? He hits like the game winner. You know, he's got he's in the Kevin Garnett answer, you know, and they go and they just say, you know, Gordon, what do you think? And he just says, I'm your Huckleberry. And then boom, and then it's like, that's it. It's over.
Dude.
Print the shirts, big wide brim hats, the whole deal.
Oh yeah, I've got a good buddy on Twitter. We gotta get this going.
Like that, yeah.
Stash Gordon.
He's played so great. He's so great. Yeah, we haven't talked about Jason Tatum, really. I mean,
teed it up and we went running.
I know.
Stash
we went
Gordon.
A different direction, but because we talked a little about Gordon, but like Tatum, he really struggled to start, right? I mean, that in the game against Milwaukee, obviously dreadful, absolutely dreadful. The next game when they were playing up against Portland, really good game, not great, but good game. 34 8-4. No, just kidding. That was really good. The Miami game, again, struggling. But since then, really solid efforts all the way through. And then today against Memphis, just unconscious. And what was interesting today is to see him really – he got maybe some confidence from the end of that Orlando game where really that was 47 minutes of Gordon Hayward kicking ass. And it was – you know, the last minute of regulation and then that 5 minute overtime when Tatum was just it. He was just the guy. He was the man. You know, that kind of takeover, Tatum kind of situation. Beautiful stuff. And then on top of that, now coming into today and just lighting it up. You know, I think the expectations on him were so, so high going into it. And my own little psychoanalysis of this is he felt that, you know, he felt like he was forcing it, felt like he was trying to take, you know, be the guy making all those shots. And then he adjusted. And really, I thought in the Toronto game, in the Orlando, you know, the early parts of the Orlando game, he's looking to create plays. And as he did that, everything kind of starts to fall back into place for him. And I think since then, using that playmaking skill, His playmaking has stepped up. Jalen's playmaking has stepped up. But those abilities, that what they've been able to do with that, I think that's really opened up his scoring here the last, you know, end of the Magic game and then today. I think that's going to be the important thing going into the playoffs here is these teams are going to be geared up for him. And I think they were to start, and he wasn't adjusting to that right off. Now he's adjusted. So now what's going to happen? What's the counterbalance going to be? What's Philly going to throw at him? You know, they're going to throw Matisse Thybulle at him. They're going to throw Tobias Harris. Good luck.
Who's going to stop that fadeaway?
No way.
He's falling back so far. If he goes any further back, he's going to literally land on his ass.
Yeah.
I don't even know how he – that's got to be almost 35 degrees of lean back. And he's already super long. You know, and yep. if he can keep dropping that in, it's unfair.
It is.
Nobody has a fadeaway like that at that length. There's, you know, like Isaiah Thomas could fade away. There's some guards, you know, that are under 6 foot that figured out that fadeaway for survival's sake. There's nobody at his length that fades like that.
Right. Because, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's got that smaller version of Giannis length. You know, he really has tremendously long arms and lanky frame. And, you know, you look at guards, I mean, the shooters who are big men, that's not something that we've seen until recently, right? A Garnett or a Garnett had that high release. And, you know, but it's different when you see a guy doing it from 30 feet. You know, it's different when you see, you know, a 6'8" guy or 6'9" guy with like arms that go through the ceiling. I mean, it's Durant, I guess, is the only other guy who's the comp there. You could say, yeah, it's like Durant, you know, and who's going to touch Durant? You know, it's the same idea.
We had a lot of comps for Tatum and Durant for a little while, and people were like having a hard time with that. They were thinking maybe more like Ingram, you know, because he was so wiry frame, right? But there were a lot of people comping, you know, Tatum with Durant. I don't think I saw it, but I remember us talking about it.
I think just in terms of frame, I think that's the closest that you can come to. I mean, a lot of people say the Paul George thing. A lot of people say, you know, the Paul Pierce thing. I think those belie what the frame issues, or, you know, the frame that he has and putting the skill. And that's the other thing. He has
tremendous skill. But his fadeaway, like you compare him to Paul, but Paul was more of the step back. And I'm not saying there isn't a step back with Tatum.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of step back. It's actually, and if you look at how he creates space out on the perimeter, it's actually more of a real subtle sidestep. It's a cat and mouse timing thing where as soon as they commit, he doesn't even do an exaggerated step. If you remember Paul at the elbow, you know, the step back, the step is exaggerated. But Tatum out on the perimeter, you know, out beyond at the 3-point line, sometimes it's a big step, but a lot of times it's a timing thing, and he just gets a couple of inches. He doesn't even need that same amount of space. But the fadeaway, the way he's just way back, Paul never was like that. Paul step back, got, you know, distance between him and the defender.
That much. That's all he needed.
Not much. Yep, not much, but it was keeping the defender farther away from him in terms of in front of him. He still, with the step back, got into normal shot position. His release might have been leaned back a little bit, but what Tatum's doing is just ridiculous.
So on that note, I'm interested to think about this. So one thing that I kind of noticed is that in terms of leadership – you know, that kind of we're in a hole, we're going to dig ourselves out of it. You know, I feel like Jalen has really been someone who has stepped up through this bubble through the year. But, something I've noticed that when things are bad, he's a guy that really kind of digs deep, smart.
Yeah, you can count on him for a couple of defense plays and he'll hit a big three. I mean, the way he's splashing threes is just –
yeah.
If that continues through the postseason, it is dangerous. Really, really dangerous. But he's very Marcus Smart-like in his willingness to take a back seat on the offensive end and just go do the dirty work. And I think that's that kind of leadership that you're talking about. And I don't know if he learned that from Smart in a way. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't a willing defender before, but and he always had the athletic ability. But if you think about the first 2 years of Jalen's career – you know, people said, look, he doesn't know where he's supposed to be. He's not making the smart play. Same kind of criticism that Rondo got, over committing on certain things. And, you know, reaction time wasn't there. And, man, if he could just put it together with his athleticism. But even nobody criticized his effort, but his effort didn't look like Smart's. And that's hard to emulate. You know, being able to walk, being able to be out of bounds and then inbounds and then jump back out of bounds and flip the ball back into play, you know, to a Celtic is ridiculous. Jalen's never going to do that. But I do feel like Jalen, and we've never really heard them talk about it, but I do feel greatly that Jalen feeds off of that from Smart and that it helped him a lot. Not so much that Jalen wasn't willing to accept that secondary role, because what he did the Kyrie year absolutely says he was and did, you know, in a circumstance where he may not have been wrong, or if he was, you know, he ate the crow quick and improved. But I think that what you're talking about, that kind of leadership, if they need a basket, he'll do a basket. If they need him to just go and grunt it on defense, he'll go grunt it on defense. He tends to draw fouls, but it might be the spark.
And, you know, that's that whole, the old, you know, kind of what does the person's demeanor look like in terms of how hard they're working thing too, in terms of, you know, that Smart Brown comparison. It's interesting how those two, Tatum and Brown, work together and mesh with each other is really, you know, is kind of fascinating. And, you know, I've been, I pay particular attention to OKC and what happened there between Durant and Westbrook. And, you know, that was a situation where they worked really well together. But, you know, there were frustrations about, you know, Russ didn't do this and Tatum.
So are you worried that Brown is going to be in that scenario because Tatum is always going to be taking that limelight?
I'm a New England sports fan who grew up in the 80s and 90s, as you did. And I always have the capacity for panic at the somewhere in my fandom. So, I'm concerned, you know, I want this to go on forever. You know what I mean? I want them to play 25 years here together and never leave.
We've been talking about it. I didn't even want to trade for Anthony Davis. That's what I wanted so bad.
I know.
And I'll even throw Smart in there. I don't want those three.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Gordon's going to move on at some point. Kemba's going to move on at some point. Would be awesome if Rob Williams, like, lurked himself into that conversation. But really, anytime you talk about the Celtics – core for the future, it's those three: Smart, Brown, and Tatum. Oh, you can just keep them together. You can go out and get vets and pack them in around them, and you can build a team. But those three players are the ones I just would hate to see any one of them leave at any point. It won't be Tom Brady-esque unless they're in their 40s, and then I'll take it.
You know, There's the argument of how far can two wings lead a team, you know, how do you need somebody at another position to play out, to step up? You know, do you need Rob Williams to be your third best player, for example? Do you need him to be better than Smart for you to get to that next level? You know, kind of like, or just in the comparison, the only thing that jumps to mind is, you know, Golden State. And being able to say, hey, you had Clay and you had Steph, but you had Draymond on the back line. You know, and I'm not saying that Rob's gonna be Draymond or exactly like that, but
it's an easy answer. The game is going to evolve. And so, you know, the answer to that is a TBD. And you have to look at how does the conference play out. We'll find out this year if they really can compete with Milwaukee. It wasn't so good last season, right?
I don't know. Jury's still out, Justin.
It was looking so good. Oh, shit, we suck.
Game one.
But this team is different. And so if we see what their ability is to compete with Milwaukee, Tatum's not done getting better. Neither is Brown. So, and I'm not saying that Milwaukee's not getting better, but what I am saying is Antetokounmpo, he might get a little bit better, and if he's lucky, he'll have the staying power of a LeBron. But it's not like if these teams are close now, if you look at the two and you look at their makeup and you look at core, outside of Milwaukee doing something to bring in another major star, the Celtics' chances of improving more and continuing to get better, especially you actually drew the comparison, you know, hey, Tatum's got this frame and he's got that same athletic ability, but a little bit shorter stature than Antetokounmpo. Well, what if Tatum fills out like Giannis did? What if he winds up becoming that strong? Because dude's not even at a point where he can pack on that muscle yet. We talked about that when they drafted him. He's skinny, but he moves and he has put on muscle. He's definitely getting stronger. So what physique does a 25-year-old Jason Tatum have? And at that point, with Giannis being that many years ahead of Jason, I'm just telling you, I think that you look at Milwaukee, you know that they can go to the finals and they have Giannis, but they don't necessarily have that center that you're talking about that maybe the Celtics need, or they need that Draymond, or they need that other player. The game's going to change. And so unless they have an unbeatable matchup in Philly, right, because maybe that team starts to balance out and then Embiid does become almost impossible for the Celtics, then you could be in a situation where you're like, they need a Rob Williams to be the third best player, because if he's not competing even at a slight disadvantage to Embiid, they'll never get by Philly. Absolutely, that could be a conversation.
You know, what's interesting too is that, you know, every year we look at what it is, and we, in our minds, we apply an incremental growth to whatever it is, and we always screw it up, right? We always say, like, well, you know, yeah, who are the good – I mean, us less so than most. I'm not saying that, that we're the only ones. But, you know, for example, when you look at the East right now, right, I mean, certainly Brooklyn is going to have Kyrie and KD next year. Will KD
it's
look like
be
KD?
Tough.
Will Kyrie look like Kyrie? We'll see, you know. But you look at the younger players, the younger rosters. I mean, I don't see a dramatic difference in the East next year. You know, apart from what Brooklyn will do, you know, Indiana could be better. Certainly, maybe Miles Turner figures out how to play with Sabonis. But you know, to me, that the East is relatively static in that there'll be incremental growth from Miami, incremental growth from Indiana. The only one who could take a leap is Philly. Yeah, yep. How much better is Toronto going to be? I mean, they're going to have to
be. You got to look at the Fred Van Fleet. So they got a lot of young players.
He's gone, though. Yeah. He's their free agent.
So you're saying they won't even re-sign him?
I don't think they'll be able to. Maybe there won't be a market for him. But to me, I would break the bank.
I have no idea what the market's going to look like. It's going to be a total crapshoot right now.
But they also have, you know, three of their top six players are after 30 or whatever Serge Ibaka is. You know, and Lowry and Gasol. And so
Gasol's the real big issue for them.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you pull him out of it, what does that team become? I fully believe, you know, Ujiri's going to be able to find somebody to fill that spot. I'm not saying, you know, they're dead in the water and forget about it. But, you know, I just look at that team. You know, they have a lot of, you know, they have some older players, relatively older players compared to a Boston situation. I think that the issue next year, I think, is what do the Celtics do in terms of their bench? Because the bench, now it's kind of coalesced. And
they're going to run out of money.
They're going to run out of money. And they've got three new draft picks that they've got to figure out a room for. They've got a stacked roster with only a couple guys coming off. You know, they're going to make some decisions. And if they're thinking next year is a year that they can contend, maybe this is the last year of contention with, you know, depending on how it happens with Gordon. You know, at what point do you start to add more vets to this bench? Because right now, your vets are Wanamaker, Cantor, and Brad Wanamaker.
We just saw Memphis.
Title contention. Like, you need more vets.
We just saw Memphis. That pick isn't going to be as good as we had all hoped over these years. And there's going to be a lot of teams out there that are going to be significantly crunching for dollars. And the best way for them to reduce dollars and not have a pissed off fan base is to do some trades for first round picks. And maybe you package up a bunch of salary on expiring deals, or you package up a bunch of rookie deal guys into one. I think the Celtics are going to be in a good position to get a quote unquote veteran, maybe not one with a max deal or anything, you know, not ridiculous conversations like we've had in the past, but I can definitely see them, to your point, saying, you know what, we just need a couple of pieces, you know, with maybe that, you know, $12 to $14 million a year veteran who fits a perfect need, who's got 2 or 3 years left on their agreement, and we can consolidate some of these picks and some of these players and match that up. And then, you know, that allows the team that acquires them to build for the future, but it also allows them to, you know, spin off some of these players or cut them and just slowly reduce salary and stay where they need to be and have a more, you know, 3 to 4 year outlook of, we're going to have mostly rookie year, you know, rookie contract deals on our roster because we're rebuilding. We're going to try to take some swings of the bat and do a lot of the things that the Celtics did when they traded away Pierce and Garnett. But at the same time, the picks that the Celtics have to offer are not going to be as enticing as the deal that they made with Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, that's true. You're right. The financial picture is going to change a lot. And the NBA doesn't even know what it looks like for next year. But once that happens, I think you're right. I think there will be a lot of teams. I think the Celtics are actually going to be pretty well, you know, situated because they don't own their own building. And so because they're paying rent, there's a lot of costs the Celtics aren't bearing as part of this whole thing that, that other teams who own their buildings are. So hopefully that it's a little bit easier on them. But yeah, it's it should be interesting, and hopefully they can turn some of these young players into some veterans who can, you know, provide some boost and some bounce. Because I think that's part of the problem for a guy like Rob Williams. And part of the reason he's doing so well in these stronger units that he's playing on is that he's playing with better players who have a better sense of where they are. When he's going in as part of these fully bench units, you know, because a lot of people don't know what they're doing. So that doesn't help Rob out. So if he's playing with a Kemba, he's playing with a Gordon Hayward, he's playing with, you know, a Marcus Smart, you know, although he's a bench player, but you know what I'm saying. It does help him greatly. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also really looking forward on Thursday to some ample Tremont Waters minutes. So
And
Taco on Thursday. So that should be fun. At noon.
Taco Thursdays. The day of the week still starts with a T, but it's not a Tuesday. You're absolutely right. There's going to be a lot of end of the bench time. I think Kemba will get some minutes. I think they'll want to keep him fresh. I don't think they'll play him a lot of minutes, but I think he will definitely get, you know, maybe about 20, just because sometimes that time off isn't good. You know, you really need to stay in that, you know, in that shape. It'll be interesting to see how they manage that. It could be another like beginning of, you know, when they were warming up where you had a first half, second half kind of deal. We could see that too. It'd almost be interesting if they did the first half with all the bench players and then did the second half with the vets, because the final minutes, it probably is neither here nor there. But John, I think we got to wrap it. This has been a good one. The regular season will be over by the time we talk to all of you again on this edition of Celtics Stuff Live. We'll be in the postseason, and we've been waiting a very long time for this.
We have indeed. I've got a real big rant for the outtakes. I hope people stick around for that, because it's worth talking about.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Celtics Stuff Live. And thank you very much for listening. A big, big thank you. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Instagram and .. Give us a rating and a review. That's going to do it. On behalf of John and myself, thank you for listening to this episode of Celtics Stuff Live.
Okay, so this week, NBC Sports Boston decided that they needed to have some cutbacks, and they decided to gut their entire program that they're running there, and they cut loose Abby Chin and A. Sherrod Blakely. Now, Sherrod has been around the team going back to 2008, I think. I think that was
he took over year. For Spears. When Spears went to
well, he didn't take over.
No. Sorry. Well, Spears was at the Globe. That's Gary Washburn. My bad.
Yeah,
they brought him in from Detroit. That's right.
Right. So, and I think, you know, Sherrod did a fine job. You know, I was very – we also
were
on air with –
Are you trying to be professional about saying, well, I like Sherrod all right, but I'm not really going to miss him?
No, what I'm saying is we weren't around for also Steve Bulpetz, you know, his layoff from the Boston Herald.
That's the real that's a real shocking issue. One for me.
Yep. But the one that I'm going to talk about right now is the one that I think is I think there's something we can do something about, folks, and that's Abby Chin. They let Abby Chin go. Now look, Abby and Sherrod are sticking around for the playoffs.
You and I are not going to agree on this one.
Well, I'm gonna cut it short then. But, listen.
Why? Just
there's a lot of people who
are dissenting voice on this.
That's right. And I'm the one.
I definitely would champion Steve Bulpet over Abby Chin.
No. This isn't either. Look, NBC Sports Boston is not picking Steve Bulpet over Abby Chin. That's not.
No, I know that. I'm just saying, if I was going to fight for somebody who lost their job in the Boston media, I know where you're going. I just can't believe you're going there. So keep going.
Oh, I'm going there. I'm definitely going there. It's absolute lunacy from NBC Sports Boston, okay? The Celtics are the linchpin of all the programming they have on that station. Everything they have runs off of Celtics basketball. I watch that channel for the purpose of watching Celtics basketball. Now, they have other programs on there, too, that are normally not that great, okay, to be honest. But this is about Celtics basketball. And admittedly, there may not be a sideline for Abby Chin to roam here over the next, you know, year. Having said that, there are some really, really bad people – bad employees, people who I do not enjoy, people who no one enjoys to watch and turn on the TV and see them on the screen. And they're still employed by NBC Sports Boston. And Abby Chin is not. And I think that's a real moronic situation. What do you mean, nah? What is nah?
I don't think she's that good.
Well, what do you expect her to do? What are you looking for, like, breakdowns of true shooting percentage? What is it that she's not giving that is the shortcoming here? Interested here.
Yeah, you know who I really liked as a sideline guy the most, or sideline person?
Yeah, go ahead.
So there was two guys who were on New England Sports Tonight, right? One was Bone on Bone, who also got let go in the layoff, Gary Tanguay. And Gary the character was annoying on purpose. Gary the person wasn't really a bad guy, you know. And he did come on and gave us a quote that put us up on USA Today. If you remember that Bone on Bone quote back in the 2000s for Wally Szczerbiak, that was like a map maker for Celtics Stuff Live. But having said that, you know, I loved Greg Dickerson as a sideline guy. I absolutely loved Greg Dickerson and Abby just doesn't, I don't know, dude, like you're kind of catching me off guard because I didn't expect this for the outtakes, but I've never been like, I tune her out. I'm just being honest with you. Like I tune her out. You know who I'd rather see, you know, do you remember Jess Camaretto, who's now like with MLB.com? She was awesome. And I think she would have been great as a sideline reporter. She had such great rapport with the players. She always got really good, like interviews, but I've never, like, does Abby write anything, you know, for the site? Do you see insights? Like, if you're just talking about somebody whose job is to regurgitate what the coach just said in the timeout, you know, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I'm saying any professional broadcaster that went to a decent broadcasting school can do that.
There's people who can repeat what other people say. I think there's a lot of people who can do that. I don't know if there's a lot of people who can do that and you can like at the same time. And I think that's
That's
important.
So maybe it's that simple. I don't really like her. I'm not saying I dislike her, but I've always been like, if somebody else stepped in there, you know, like when Chris Forsberg would come and show up and do it, I was like, cool. You know, I like Chris, you know? We've had him on the show. I've seen him in person a zillion times. He's personable. He talks to people, you know, and I get it. Everybody's got a job to do, but I just didn't. Yeah. I just, no, no.
Well, I think I hear what you're saying, but you're wrong. And anyway, no, I mean, look, it's okay. It's, you know, everyone's got their own cup of tea, right? That's fine. I think the issue is that, one, she's well-liked. Whether she's not your cup of tea, there's a lot of people who are pretty upset, pretty frustrated that NBC Sports Boston's going this way. And I think that's a problem. I think, two, the other problem is that they're cutting back on their – you know, they've got two writers for the team for the core piece of what they do, Celtics basketball. And they just cut that in half. Like, well, we only need Chris. And I'm glad Chris has got his gig. You know, Chris is a good dude, does a great job. But what exactly is the plan? Because there's a lot of people employed by NBC Sports Boston that are, you know, shouldn't be employed anywhere, frankly, in journalism. John Tomasi made up a whole story about the Patriots, recording the Rams walkthrough, and yet somehow that guy still has a job. I don't understand that. You know, I think there's other people there who I'm like, really? you know, we have a show on at 10 o'clock on that channel that I don't know anybody who watches that show. It's the biggest waste of time going. So to me, Celtics basketball, going back to Sports Channel, going back to Prism,
but that's what
channel's all about. And they're partly owned by the Boston Celtics at that.
So let me ask you this, okay? If there is no sideline reporting to be done, how do you know you want her doing the writing or anchoring that show? Or
No one writes that anymore.
But I'm just saying, you said they have two writers. Well, then fine. Then they should cut the writers too. You don't retain somebody. See, your argument is the same thing that's wrong with the presidential debate. I don't like this guy, so I'll take anybody else. So I'm going to go with this guy. And what you're saying is we should save Abby because they have these two writers, you know, that are writing full time that, you know, are no good and there's no value there. My point is, if she's not going to do that job, you know what I mean? And her job literally isn't a job right now, then, you know what I mean? Like, I just think you're living in a fantasy world with
this. You're not watching the channel anymore. You don't understand. It's like that whole channel.
No, you're right. I don't watch it anymore.
It's a complete, like, disaster. Like, the whole channel is like, there's nothing worth watching. They have all this programming to have Gary Tangori and Trini Kuznarek yell at each other about nonsense, and nobody cares about any of it. And it's like, why are we doing this? Like, this is not entertaining. I can't imagine anyone is watching this. And so they're letting people go who are part of their core constituency of what people watch that channel, and instead they're holding on to something that is really unfulfilling and uninteresting. So
I get what you're saying.
I'm not debating
whether the content's good or not, because as you made the point, I'm out of market. I don't watch any of it. But that's not a reason to keep somebody who doesn't fill a role because there is no sideline reporting. Like, there literally is no sideline reporting, and there may not be again for quite some time. You don't keep them. So the point is this: what are you keeping her for? And what role are you going to move her to that you think she's going to excel at that's going to be any different than what they asked, you know, Trini to do?
Do any studio job. I mean, you know, run halftime, run whatever. I mean, there are other studio
that's
gigs.
That's programming, not the person, right? It's
sure.
Programming.
But you're saying the programming is gone. I'm trying to say the programming exists that she fits into. I think, you know.
No, you're saying that she should go into that programming and bring new life to it, right? That's what you're
saying. I'm
saying
she's capable of that.
That they shouldn't do it the way they were doing it.
I'm saying she's capable of that. I'm saying that if your argument is that, well, they're getting rid of this one area, and so then what do you do? What I'm saying is there's more available for that person to do than just
that. And what I'm saying is that it's not – you want to replace people – because you don't like the programming. It's not the people, it's the programming.
You take Abby and
slot her into that, she's going to be arguing with so-and-so because that's what they're expecting for that role. It doesn't mean that the network's making the right decision about programming, but that's what will be expected of her. If you move her from her current role, which is now no longer a role, and move her into one of those other roles, you're just going to get her doing the same thing. Because it's the programming. It's not the person. It's the programming.
Well, I have problems with the programming, and I have problems with the personnel decisions in terms of what people are capable of and who they're holding on to. So, I guess I have problems with both issues.
So, you really think she's got – like, I don't know why you're convinced that Abby has, you know, like more – I don't know why you think that she has more ability than somebody else that's – you know, like Gary already got let go, so I guess he's not arguing with Trini anymore, you know, and, you know, I just don't know what you think that you have seen Abby do that is going to be any better than what you're not happy with today. I don't know how you're convinced of that.
Well, I think you're mixing the two issues, though. I think the issue is it's the programming in terms of decision making of what they want to program on the channel, but two, just on the pure merits of having employing people that people like and want to watch on TV is an important thing on television. They don't necessarily have to be, you know, someone who's providing analysis and commentary.
People like Abby as much as you think they do.
I think you're wrong. Yeah. I think you're misreading that one, because I think there's a wide range of that, and I think that the problem is that and there was a number of articles that came out today that, you know, this is something that NBC Sports is doing across and all of their regional networks. They're cutting back, and they're doing so in a way that's really harming their product in the long run. And they're making decisions based upon things other than what's in the best interest of you know, covering the markets that they're tasked to do. I think that's a problem, and I don't like to see the preeminent network for the Boston Celtics falling by the wayside, becoming a Nesson light. That's not a good thing. You know, Nesson has been, you know, to me, a really poorly run organization for a long time, and I think that they're just taking a step into that world, which is really. I had hoped that we were the channel that we have to watch the Celtics wouldn't be going down that road, but alas, here we are.
Also, yes, that may be totally fair and legitimate criticism. I just don't think that and Abby are as tied together as you think. And, you know, I think it has everything to do with leadership and programming. I mean, if you told me that they let Mike go, Mike Gorman, I'd be up in arms. And I was very disappointed to see the Herald let go of Bull Pett, but also shocked because he by far got most of the information that nobody else could get from Danny. He broke most stories. And whenever Danny wanted to feed some shade out into the, you know, and you always knew when Steve was, you know, floating something for the benefit of the organization, because it'd be another like breaking thing. And he's been on the show and alluded to things in the past that he's clearly privy to that we didn't get from other people. Like informationally, I don't know why the Herald, and maybe Steve's salary was just too much, but I don't know why the Herald would, and this will be kind of the closing point. I don't know why the Herald be willing to risk that unless they feel like that information's coming from Danny because they're the Herald. And I just simply don't believe that. You know, I think that somebody like Bull Pett has to create a relationship with Danny for Danny to trust the Herald and trust Steve to, you know, do things discreetly and in a way that he's comfortable with, or he stops giving him the scoops. And I don't think that's Herald based. I think that it's Herald related, but Steve's integrity. So unless Steve made a super screw up and they just use this as an opportunity, unless that's what happened, that's behind the scenes and we're not privy to that, I don't get it. I don't get that. And that's what I'm telling you about Abby. I don't see what Abby brings to the table that somebody else who also has a likable or affable personality, if they decide to start this back up, couldn't achieve in a short period of time. I think that the people that are valuable are the ones that have insights and information that others can't get. And this is where I'm going with your comments about, you know, all of that. The truth is this, you know, if the Herald can't see the value in Steve, they're either making a critical error or the market doesn't dictate it anymore, because nobody cares in the market about that Steve has that knowledge. It's not what sells papers. It's not what people pay attention to. And if you're disappointed with the quality of the product, the decision makings of people who they're letting go, and the content and the programming, it has everything to do with the fan base reacting to things that don't have value, because that's what makes people who are good at their jobs less valuable. If you can just take somebody out and plug somebody else back in and have the same amount of sales, and it could be a miscalculation on any of these people's parts, right? You know, when the leadership has to make a decision. But in times like these, difficult decisions have to be made. Sports is making less money. Advertising is down. We didn't have events for how long, and they were paying people to report on things. And, you know, again, the value's not there. And that's why I say I don't disagree with your overarching point. I just disagree with the fact that I think you can take Abby out. I think you can find somebody else and plug them back in. And as long as, you know, they test it out on the likability scale, it's probably not going to have any impact on the organization or the business moving forward.
Well, I think that's, you know, I think that's kind of that may be where we are. I think that's pretty sad if you know, I think, you know, you can put a lot of people out there. There's been a revolving door of people who have been working for NESN over the years. And some that are likable and some that make an impact in terms of what people want to watch. And maybe they're saying people are going to watch Celtics broadcast regardless. But I think that makes a poorer broadcast in the end. You know, I could go on a rant here about corporate interests and what the value of money versus quality and exploiting the worker and all that. I'm going to save that for another time and all it goes. But it seems like that's an opportunity there for when you have something good, you don't give it away. And there's no salary cap. There's nothing that prevents them from doing what they need to do to make a better product for the viewers. And I think the viewers will be poorer for their move. And I think the product will be poorer for their move. But, you know, again, it's maybe that's a sad reality that we're all facing. So let's hope not. All right.
Wow.
That's it.
That outtake was a whole show on its own.
There you go. There you go. Oh, my God. Wow.
You didn't know that it was going to be as contentious as it was.
I didn't. I thought you were just going to try to go to bed halfway through the middle of it. So
I do want to go to bed, but and I need to. But, yeah, dude, I am not an Abby fan at all. There's something about her that irritates me. I just didn't want to say it that way because